Okay, everybody, let's go ahead and get started. Welcome to FriendNet's Spotlight, Franchisor Spotlight webinar. My name is Cindy Rayfield, and I'm going to introduce myself here in a moment. I do want to take a couple of minutes and go over FriendNet, who we are, a little bit about our company, and then I'm going to go ahead and present Michael Mudd, who's going to be talking about our franchise for the evening. So let's go ahead and get started here. Who is FriendNet? Just so you're all aware, FriendNet is a 25-year-old international franchise consulting firm. We have over 70 offices in North America. We also have offices in Germany. So we are having a presence in Europe as well. We have worked with the Small Business Administration since 1987, so we have very strong ties with the SBA and many of their offshoot organizations that help people who want to get established in businesses. We are a proud contributor to the Wounded Warrior Project. Really what we do is we're matchmakers. We're franchise matchmakers. We match people up. We match people who want to be in business with a franchise that meets their needs. And we do this at no cost, because we operate very similarly to a headhunter. We do get paid by our franchise partners when we place a candidate into one of our franchises. So it's really a win-win for everybody. You do get a chance to go through a process with no obligation and learn about a particular concept that you might be interested in purchasing at some point or investing in. Our approach is very simple. We make sure we understand your goals, your criteria, your needs, your budget, how much you want to spend, how much you can afford to spend, because those two numbers can be very different for people. We do focus on the best possible companies that meet your criteria. So we do take a look at all concepts that would meet your criteria, and we talk to you about those and see which ones capture your interest. We provide you with coaching along the way as you follow our proven system for research. There is a lot of due diligence that's involved in deciding on a business, and we do coach you through that. The franchises that you work with will also coach you as well, so you get some very good information on researching a business as you go through our process. And again, our services are paid for by the franchisors that we work with. We have an inventory of about 125 different concepts. A little bit about me. My name, as I mentioned at the very beginning, is Cindy Rayfield, and I'm a franchise consultant in Colorado, Wyoming, and Montana. I've been with FriendNet for 6 years as a consultant, 15 years as a business owner in various businesses, both as a startup business owner and as a franchisee. I do have a corporate background in marketing, finance, banking, telecommunications, very neutral, not very specific types of business experience, which a lot of franchises really look for when they're looking for candidates. They want somebody with some general business experience, but nothing really specific and focused. You can listen to some of our other webinars to learn about our process for helping people understand what a good candidate looks like for a franchise. I am a graduate of the University of Denver, and my office is right here in the Denver Tech Center, which is where I am conducting this webinar. So I'm very happy to get started here and move into our featured franchisee for the evening. So with that, I want to talk about our feature spotlight franchisor. They have some very appealing features, which will be further explained in the webinar by Michael Mudd, our presenter. Number one, it is the largest retailer in its category. It's simple, it's scalable with quick ramp up. It's got low inventory. It's a great semi-absentee opportunity, and it's an all-cash business. And this is really important. This should be important for a lot of people. It's actually very fun to operate as a business owner. Customers have an experience when they visit this business, and that's just what the franchisor is going for, to create an inexpensive family event where the customers choose to be there, and they want to have fun themselves. Franchisees in this business maintain a high profile in the community. They become active in local chambers of commerce, in schools, in sports leagues, in church groups, things of that nature. The concept is a recognizable brand that some of you may have visited yourself. The name of tonight's concept is Menchie's Yogurt. I don't want to steal his thunder, so I'm going to turn it over this evening to Michael Mudd, who is Menchie's Senior Franchise Development Manager. And Michael, I hope I got your title right. So if that's okay with you, we'll go ahead and take over from there. I'll let you take over from there.
Okay, wonderful, Cindy. And thank you very much for providing me an opportunity to present Menchie's on behalf of our brand. Again, my name is Michael Mudd. I'm the Senior Franchise Development Manager with Menchie's. I'm one of 110 team members that work for our brand to support our franchisees. I've been with our brand for 5 years and work in a recruitment capacity. So my job with Menchie's is to work with candidates who are a good fit with our brand and help them through an exploration process so they can evaluate Menchie's, make accurate assessments, and determine if our business model fits their stated objectives. I love this brand and have been in recruitment. I guess now it's been about 10 years. Prior to Menchie's, I worked with a brand for a lot of years called Relax the Back, which is a premium brick-and-mortar retail operation, and cut my teeth in franchising there. And I've worked with various brands. Actually, with Menchie's, I started off when we were just 31 stores in size, and it's been a fantastic ride. I've seen the brand flourish today to where we've actually grown tenfold, and it's an honor to be in front of the group and really help you guys understand our brand, our business model, and our position within the category of frozen yogurt. So I guess if you don't mind, I'll start off with just a quick introduction to the brand itself and just giving you a couple of quick data points. Today we stand at 449 stores strong, and we're an international brand. We operate in 15 countries around the globe. And some interesting places like China. We've got stores in Japan and Australia and South Africa. Actually, the top-performing store in the world for our brand is in Dubai. We also have a store in Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, 3 stores in Pakistan. So there's a really good presence in the brand globally. And we also have presence right now in 39 states here in stateside U.S. Now, domestic, just to kind of chunk the numbers down for you, we have 320 stores operating here in the U.S., and the rest of the stores are international. Now, the international stores are being supported by master entities. So just so you understand, we have redundant infrastructure in the international markets to support the countries. And then we have about 110 people on payroll here to support the domestic franchisees. Now, there's about 180 franchisees that operate the 320 stores here in the U.S. So there's a good presence of multi-unit franchisees in our brand. A lot of franchise owners like the scale that our model offers, and they tend to reinvest in growth. We're a bit overstaffed at the present because of the growth within the brand. In addition to the 449 that we have operating, there's another 300-plus stores in active phases of development, and those stores would be in some real estate process, store designs, or construction. The store will be over 500 stores by – I'm sorry, the brand will stand at over 500 stores by the end of the year and will be at about 700 stores within the next 2 years. Some of you may recognize our brand from the Emmy Award-winning TV show Undercover Boss. We were featured the first time on Undercover Boss last year in October, and we drove a lot of ratings to CBS. They actually had a very vibrant response to the brand, and they repurposed our brand again on a special series called Undercover Employee, which was featured again in February of this year. So we've been on 2 features for Undercover Boss. 11 million people tune into that every year. So if you're one of the 4% of America that watch that show, you may know us just from that TV show itself. The brand served over 40 million cups of yogurt just last year alone, just to give you a size in terms of production. And we are the largest self-serve frozen yogurt franchise in the world. Now, the brand isn't about the yogurt. Okay, it's a great product, guys. Don't misunderstand what I'm stating. But it's very experiential. What we're offering is a community environment. It's a celebratory experience at Menchie's. The community comes to the store for time with their friends and their family. So it's more about a third-place retail environment, and we're serving a community need for a place for people to get together. And you're going to find a lot of children that are very engaged with our brand. It's very family-friendly. We also are a destination or a hangout for teenagers. They love to meet at Menchie's. It's a safe place for them. They can spend time after the movie or after a football game. It's also the perfect date night. The average guest will come over to Menchie's for 23 minutes. And while they're at the store, our brand mission is We Make You Smile. Now, We Make You Smile is more of a brand culture. So it's very culturally sound. We apply a really guest experiential model to Menchie's, and it's community-oriented with outreach into the community. It's a very fun retail sequence where the guest comes to you. So it's a brick-and-mortar retail store, so it has a physical location, and the guest will come to you. Now, some benefits to Menchie's. So it's food, but we don't have a restaurant. There's no kitchen at a Menchie's. So it fits in this little market. It's snack food. It's fun food. So it allows you to get the frequency rate that you would get with food, because people consume food more than they do anything else. And in fact, with frozen desserts, 45% of Americans consume the product every single week. And 4.5% of Americans will consume frozen treats every single day. So you're getting a frequency pattern where you're getting kind of a weekly behavior, kind of like a burger frequency pattern, but you don't have to deal with the kitchen. So that's a big benefit, is the reoccurring revenue model Menchie's produces, and it also gives you operational simplicity, which allows you to grow, it allows you to scale, and you can operate it through a manager with very few moving parts. How we view the relationship with our franchisees is very much like a partnership. Right? We're going to rely on franchisees to deploy systems, and we have some very refined operational systems that are designed to produce predictability in the store outcome. And then you can count on us to provide support through everything else. So one big thing that we provide at Menchie's is innovation. We're creating differentiation in our core product offerings. And I'm giving you a quick example here of the Key Lime Pie product. And we launched this with a very fun campaign. Our brand is very fun. It's whimsical. We tell a story with our brand. And you can count on us to keep innovation in the product and staying relevant into the marketplace. We're going to talk about that a lot in a moment as we talk about branding. We're at this point partnering with the giant brands. So being the largest in our category has big advantages. One big advantage is it allows us to go reach out to brands like Oreo Cookie. Now, Oreo Cookie is now being exclusively found at Menchie's. So if you guys want to go into the store today, you'll find two formulations that we did in-house at Menchie's. We did just the cookie and just the cream. So as you come into our store, you're finding a fully Oreo-branded product exclusively found within our brand. And then we do custom formulations in-house with R&D to formulate the offering. Okay, so from a marketing standpoint, we do big brand partnerships. Oreo would be one example. And then we take that into R&D, which is led by Laura Baldwin. Laura Baldwin was recruited from PepsiCo. She's been with us, our brand, about 5 years, and she's a culinarian and a food scientist. And she has the mass production knowledge from Pepsi. We also have a dairy scientist in our brand, and we have just a third team member that work in creating fantastic product offerings within our stores. Earlier this year, if you look into the first quarter of 2014, we partnered exclusively with Girl Scouts USA. And we did a formulation that was exclusive to our brand of the Samoya cookie. We did a Thin Mint cookie. We translate those offerings into our frozen dessert all in-house. We did a big partnership with Hershey's, and that was just a couple months ago, where we launched an exclusive Heath offering. We also did a Reese's Peanut Butter Cup offering. In November this year, we're partnering exclusively with Cinnabon. Cinnabon's giving us their full branding rights, and we're doing a Cinnabon-flavored frozen yogurt. We're doing cinnamon roll toppings. We're doing a frosting drizzle, and it's all branded with Cinnabon. All right, so we also partner with other things. We do a lot of paid product placements. So instead of doing national TV, our preference is to do paid product placements where we integrate into the TV show or into a movie. People are now fast-forwarding TV commercials, so we integrate into movies like Enough Said, where they did a big scene inside of Menchie's where they come in the store and they use the word Menchie's inside of the movie Enough Said. those of you who watch Parenthood, we just did a paid product placement in Parenthood just a couple of months ago. We do prize packs on The Price is Right. We do gift card programs in Costco and Sam's Club. So we're partnering with big brands. These strategic partnerships create more awareness, more traffic, and give us a competitive advantage from our core product offering. Now, it's not just brands that you guys are interacting with in terms of flavor. We also do movie integration. And this is something you'll commonly find with McDonald's or the bigger brands. So, for example, we partnered last year with Sony Pictures, and they launched Smurfs 2. Now, we did an integration that gave us exclusivity for the month of July. We did a Smurf Berry Blast. We did licensed cup designs. We did window clings. We had even Smurfette doing in-store radio spots for us. A lot of fun integration with the Smurf story. Now, to give you guys an idea, not only did we pick this up exclusively for July, McDonald's then picked it up exclusively for August, and they did their Happy Meal integration. So this is where the brand is already. Okay, we're only at 449 with a lot of additional momentum in the brand. So we're going to continue to work on partnerships, and we're working on all kinds of initiatives to give us something where we're integrating brand stories inside of the Menchie's world. When you look at branding, I'm going to share with you some of the most powerful brands in the world today. And this is something you guys can apply to any concept that you may be interested in or anything that you're evaluating. I'm showing you some of the most, they're the leaders in their respective categories, right? And these guys have global recognizability with the exception of Menchie's. So I want you guys just to think out loud. When you look at these brand marks, what do they all share in common as it relates to branding and marketing? Right? What's similar between all of them in branding and in marketing? First thing you're going to notice is their standalone brands. A standalone brand is one that can be identified without words, and they're not defined by their core product offering. Okay, so, for example, you guys can recognize the apple through the symbol. So it's a universally recognizable symbol. If I'm in China, I speak Mandarin. I don't speak English. And if you shared with me that apple symbol, I'll instantly recognize that brand, even though I speak Mandarin. So it transcends language. It doesn't need common language to define the brand. Much more impactful, these are iconic brands. Now think about the way they position their brand. Right? How do these brands communicate a message to their end user, to their customer? And now think about Disney. What are they selling at Disney? A product? Does Disney sell Disney? Like, Disney offers the Magic Kingdom. It's an experiential brand in its true sense. So Disney can be found in a resort. It can be found in a cruise line. It can be found I can find it in a retail product, in a flip-flop, for example. I have a 3-year-old who won't leave my house without her Minnie Mouse flip-flops. My question is, why? Why is my daughter so connected to the flip-flop? Because of the flip-flop or because of the Minnie Mouse on the flip-flop? So what I'm getting at is Disney's telling a brand story. That story has heavy engagement. The brand is emotionally connecting to its guest outside of a core product. The core product can and will change with Disney. They'll offer all kinds of different things within the context of their brand. What about McDonald's? Didn't McDonald's just redo their entire menu? Aren't they going into a cafe concept? Like, their brand isn't selling McDonald's. There's much more substance to the brand. The brand over years has told a story which creates some emotional engagement specifically to children. So, guys, these are experiential brands, and Menchie's is very experiential. What is Menchie's offering you? Think about it. Now, if you look in your market, you guys can look at your own competition in the category of frozen yogurt. You're going to find brands like Yogurt Land, Yogurtini, Yogurtology, Yogurt Mountain, Yogurtini, Yogalicious, Yogin Fruz, This Country's Best Yogurt, which is what? TCBY. They're all doing the same thing. So they're positioning around a product, they're communicating through the product, and they're branding the product. So they're very similar to Burger King. Now, if you're writing a product life cycle, which is what I'm saying, all those brands are writing a product life cycle that may end. Menchie's is not. we can create adaptability in our product offering over time as a generational, sustainable brand. Now, we offer frozen desserts, and it's important that you know that. We'll continue to be a frozen dessert offering. We're not going to get into pizza or to chicken within Menchie's, right? But we are able to adapt things into ice cream, gelato. We already have a full line of sorbets. For the sorbet fans out there, we have 14 different sorbet products. So we're in a soft-serve frozen treat format. Soft-serve desserts have been around since 1928. Dairy Queen sells soft-serve dessert. McDonald's sells soft-serve dessert. Carvel's, if you guys like custard, soft-serve offering. Now, frozen desserts have been around since frozen desserts have been around since 200 BC. First discovered in China. Do you want to learn the history of frozen desserts? And they had snow up in the mountains. They took it off and mixed it with rice water. So we're in a category experiential. We're providing a community need, a place that people can come spend time with their families and their friends, something that they enjoy that makes them smile. So it's a third place hangout. And the product offering can't change. It'll be cold and it'll be sweet. All right? So count on the brand to stay innovative and continue refining things in the context of our brand for sustainability. The branding is family friendly. It's a very fun, interactive brand. The brand tells a story. And the story is disconnected from its core product. So, you guys, there's characterization in the branding. Menchie, Mookie, Kiwi, Berry, Chip, Mellow, all of them are brand characters. Now, those characters can extend beyond the core product, and we can create the story kind of like M&M's. You guys are all familiar with the candy M&M? Interesting enough, you watch an M&M TV commercial, and what are you seeing? Characterization. And you can actually emotionally connect to that brand. You're relating to the brand. And you might think, oh, look at those cute M&M guys. Now, your kids going to the toy store are going to find branded M&M toys, branded M&M games. So there's a lifestyle component to their brand. And it's much more than a product-oriented marketing position, guys. So I want you to understand that. Menchie's tells a story through its characters. One way you'll see the character integration is in retail products. We have a full line of retail product. Sorry, guys. I'm trying to get this to load on the presentation. Bear with me here. Okay. So the brand extends through all kinds of touch points. And so there's an interactive component to the branding. And I'm going to personalize this story. And I have a three-year-old. Her name is Piper. And Piper loves Menchie's, and partially because I love Menchie's, and I talk about it a lot. But she has a connection with the brand that's not through a frozen dessert. She goes in the store, and she can get a fully customizable dessert, and it's a healthier alternative. So if you think about your market, what are they demanding? What are you demanding as a consumer? Aren't you looking for healthier alternatives? Absolutely. And aren't you looking for customization in your food? Aren't you looking for Chipotle? And what about Subway? And what about Starbucks? Aren't you looking for a customizable option? So my family, it wins. It's something I want to be healthier. I want to provide something wholesome to my family. But my kid loves it. Okay, and Piper loves it because she connects to the brand story. When she comes in the store, there's helium balloons. So she is emotionally – a balloon makes a big difference to my daughter. She loves balloons. She goes through the sequence, and she's in this independent stage so she can customize her dessert perfect for what she wants. And she gets the independence of doing that. For those of you who are with kids, right, they're always like, I do it all by myself. She's always, I do it. So she gets to do it at Menchie's. And then she sits down and she starts coloring the characters with crayons. And she gets tattoos. That there's a rub-on tattoo for every character, so she collects. Her favorite character, by the way, is Mookie. Mookie's the cow character. So she gets a Mookie rub-on tattoo that then she takes home with her, and she's walking around the neighborhood telling her friends about Mookie and this story, this experience she just had with the store. She gets stickers, and the stickers, again, she always collects the Mookie sticker. Now, how that I see this in my world, she puts the sticker on the car seat. She's in the back of the car, right, with a frontward-facing car seat, and she sticks a bunch of Mookie stickers on there. We're going to the store every week, so there's tons of stickers, and she's being reminded of this brand continually. It's a lifestyle brand. Now, one of the biggest things you're going to see in a touch point is our spoons. The spoons are often LTOs. We do limited time offers with our spoons. We do featured spoons. We launch color-changing spoons. So we play with the spoon designs to keep the market excited about this touch piece. Now, people are collecting them. I've seen people making literally dresses and walking down the runway. They cut them and make keychains with them. Kids will want to put them in their lunchbox. They take them to school. My daughter won't even eat breakfast without a Mookie spoon. She demands it. So kids get connected to the brand story. There could be toys, the sticky heads, watches, lip balms, the spoon touches. We have plush dolls, T-shirts, hoodies, beanie caps, all these little touch points that integrate. Now, technology. Don't we love it? Menchie's integrates the technology inside of the brand. We have a loyalty card called My Smileage. We have 5.2 million loyalty card holders with this brand. 807,000 of them have registered their card. Now, in the process, we collect their contact details. So we do email campaigns. We do geo-targeted text campaigns. We have an interactive smartphone technology called Smile World. You can download all this, guys, right on iTunes. They're free to download. So you have a store locator application. We have a game application, all of which integrates back into My Smileage. This year, we're launching a brand new point-of-sale system. And guests that come in the store can take their smartphone from their pocket, bump it onto our POS, and integrate loyalty points right through their smartphone. Right? That integration then takes contact details from their keychain on the phone. It gives us all their contact details. We can then watch consumer behavior. We can look at frequency rates. We can look at response rates on marketing initiatives. All that stuff is being done right through My Smileage. It's a huge advantage for retention and frequency rates. Those are the two cornerstones that we provide with Menchie's. Retention, again, branding, that's very engaging, got relatability. The kids love it. When you get the kids, what else do you get? The family. We don't alienate the adult. We don't alienate the senior. What we do in branding is very much like Disney. Disney does the same thing, guys, very kid-oriented, creates heavy engagement. Who do you see at Disneyland? Everybody. Same thing with Menchie's. It appeals to 80% of the market. We win through the family. And it's a very engaging brand that gets retention, and we can encourage additional frequency rate. Again, the average guest with Menchie's will be visiting our stores once per week. We want to encourage heavier frequency pattern with that guest retention. We've won a lot of awards and recognitions. You guys, what I'm sure, would expect that. I mean, we are dominating the category, but articles written by Harvard Business Review. We've been on Forbes magazine. Actually, this year in February, Forbes ranked this brand as the number 16th most promising companies in America. I'm not talking franchises, guys, companies. The Wall Street Journal has written articles about Menchie's. We're the leader in our category in Entrepreneurs Franchise 500. What I would say, guys, if you have any interest at all, start Googling. Go on to Facebook. We have 330,000 Facebook followers. Go on to Yelp. Go to YouTube and just type Menchie's and see what comes up. Folks come in the stores. They do game nights. They do open mic nights with high school students. It's very community connected, where you can get into the community and create a positive impact in the community you serve. And a super fun brand, but it's getting recognized by a lot of different resources and sources out in the market. As I spoke about, the model is food without the restaurant. Now, why that's important to note is it gives you operational simplicity. A simple operation allows you to have less moving parts, and you can focus less time in the individual store. So it's a lifestyle business. It's one you can operate through a manager. It's one that you can duplicate and scale, so you can grow it to a large-scale multi-unit franchise. We talked about production. So Menchie's is always doing innovation, right? And we're creating new concepts, and we have a fully integrated test kitchen at Menchie's. When we get a new product that we're going to launch, we go down to a partner creamery. The partner creamery is called Scott Brothers, and then they mass-produce the product centrally. We control the product quality centrally. The product's fully made and fully mixed. It's actually a liquid dairy product that's put into a gallon container. Those gallon containers are then frozen. So the product's deep frozen when it's shipped to you, which extends the shelf life to 2 years. You only have to deal with spoilage. The product is then sent through to food distribution. We have food distributors that will take the product from Scott Brothers to a regional cold storage facility. We in total have 9 cold storage facilities within this brand. We maintain huge inventory levels there, which we're able to do because their spoilage is almost non-existent. At that point, the individual stores order from the food distributor. The food distributor delivers to the individual stores all of the products. And you're receiving the paper goods, the frozen desserts, and the toppings from the food distributor. Now, at the individual store, you're receiving these gallons, and they're frozen, so you stick them into your walk-in freezer. Now, from the walk-in freezer, your team is going to move them to the walk-in refrigerator where the product goes back to liquid. From there, all you do is take the liquid and pour it into a soft serve machine. That's the operation. So you're taking liquids, pouring them into machines. What we do not have is a cook. Right? We don't even have skilled labor, guys. The labor is a very simple labor to work with. They're college students, fun labor to work with, and we have very strong retention on that labor. We also don't have a menu because it's fully customizable. There's no menu that hangs in the front of the store. We have no grills, no grease, no hoods, no vents, no servers, and no busboys. So the whole back of the store really chunks down to storage. You have both rack storage and you have refrigerated storage. Right? And you've got machines. You have 7 of these soft serve machines. You have sinks. And you got a little 3-foot counter where you can fill your toppings. The toppings are candies, cereals, granolas, nuts, all pre-made. You just fill toppings, topping bins. And then you've got about 4 fresh fruits. There's systems throughout the entire operation. VP operation is Gary Hunter. We got him. He ran operations for 10 years for Jamba Juice. That's where we recruited him from. He ran operations for Jack in the Box and Bennigan's. And he created the operational systems. The systems contain job aids, lookbooks, scheduling software. We even have a playbook that designates every operational task that would take place in the store so you can delegate them to your team. So the operational systems are in place to create predictability in the store results. But it's simple. In the front, the guest serves themselves. Right? The self-serve model is where it's great, guys. So the guest controls their own portion. So you don't have to worry about portion control. The guest is also fully customizing their product, and it reduces your labor cost. So you get much higher margins. There's very little inventory. The store will hold about $4,000 worth of inventory. You're running very low payroll costs. Footprint small, 1,200 square feet to maybe 1,400 square feet is kind of what we're looking for in terms of locations. It's very customer-friendly. And the customer comes to you. You don't have to go get them, right? They're coming to you. It's a destination store. And it's a very fun business to own and operate. Now, our franchisees, they come from all walks of life. You guys, we have large-scale, multi-unit franchisees. Our largest franchisee is Bob Stark. He operates out in Cleveland with 20 stores operating today, and he's growing more. We have a couple handfuls of franchisees at that scale, but that's abnormal. Okay, that's big scale, guys. We do have a model for that. But most franchisees are doing single store operations, 3 store operations, or 5 store operations. 1, 3, and 5 is the most common way people enter our business. And they could be doctors. If doctors want semi-absentee operations. They want a business that'll work without their direct involvement because they're busy in the operating room. We are a perfect model for them. Teachers love us. It's a family business. They can create the community impact, so it's a very good fit for a teacher. Parents, it's a family brand. Diversified entrepreneurs who are looking at doing multiple business streams. They have portfolios of businesses. They'll oftentimes invest with Menchie's. We have veterans. We have displaced executives who are looking at something that they can control, something that's going to give them the flexibility and the lifestyle they're seeking. Investors. Engineers, IT professionals, a lot of different franchisee profiles fit this model. Again, you do not need food in your background because we do not have a restaurant. Our franchisees want to make a positive impact in their community. That's the fabric you'll find without all franchisees in our system, and it's what I'm looking for as a recruitment manager. We also are a fun business. Our franchisees are having fun while making the world a better place. We have three different business models to meet the objectives. And so franchisees integrate with Menchie's different ways. Some franchisees like to be owner-operator, where they are actually involved in the day-to-day operation of their store. They're managing it. They're typically 20 to 40 hours per week of participation. They're running their own team. They're handling their own schedule, payroll, ordering, inventory, those tasks. Now, a lot of franchisees want to go semi-absentee, so they want to put a manager in the store that would reduce their time to about anywhere between 5 and 15 hours per week. And at that point, there's a manager who's handling all of the operational responsibility. The franchisees just left at strategic level. They're making strategic decisions. We also have an absentee model. For example, Bob Stark that I spoke about in Cleveland, he's absentee. These franchisees are typically empire builders, so they're growing heavy infrastructure. Okay, so if you look at the breakdown in between all of these, owner-operator, again, more active, 20 to 40 hours a week, and they're handling all of the responsibility, the operational responsibility, not the actual running of the shifts. And that's important for you to know. Our franchisees typically are not working the cash register. An owner-operator would be managing their operation. We have camera access to the store, meaning you would have camera access to your own operation, so you can manage it remotely. If you scale it or grow it, you would have access to all of your stores in one, let's call it home office or one physical location, which will allow you to manage your operation much more effectively without having to go to the individual stores. That comes in place really well for semi-absentee. We have a lot of folks who are full-time employed, and they're looking for diversity in income. They're looking at some control because they may have been displaced, and they want to make sure they never are liable again downstream. Menchie's is a model that works really well for semi-absentee. Very few moving parts, operationally simple, and something that a manager can easily execute on. Again, operational systems are already there. You do not need to recreate them. This is an established franchise system. We've got the systems in place for the predictability you look for when you're semi-absentee. And it's a brand that's known and becoming even more known. Guys, at 700 stores in 2 years, we'll have about 95% unaided brand recognition. That's what we're talking about. Semi-absentee works well with us, and so does absentee. If you want to go absent, meaning 0 to 3 hours in a week in the store, that's fine, but you're going to need some infrastructure. It works best for big development, 5 and more. If you want to be absent at that level, just make sure you're looking at an objective to do 5 or more, because you want to leverage a GM, and you want to scale the payroll off GM off of multiple stores to make the economics and your labor model work. If you guys, we can go through these different models because they're very defined with our brand, and I can cover that in more detail if you wish to downstream. Systems, guys. Again, this is a partnership in its true sense. We will provide the support and the services to make you smile. We provide everything from guest care. We have a full integration in our offices to provide guest service, guest contacts, guest care. We're fully integrated in the real estate process. We actually visit every single location before the lease is signed. We do all of the boots on the ground due diligence work. We run everything through analytical software called Buxton. What we do in the process of real estate is mitigate your risk. We want to make sure that it's the right location. We're a patient brand. We don't force you on timelines. We really want to see that you get positioned in the right real estate for long-term sustainability. Also, with construction, it's fully managed. We actually visit the location and even do a site survey before we sign the lease. So if a landlord says, hey, we've got a HVAC unit in the store, we want to verify that, and we actually fly to do so, so we mitigate the construction challenges. But the construction process is fully managed. We also do our store designs in-house. We have a world-class education platform, which we have a fully functional university, and it's run by Abe Villegas. Abe was recruited from Starbucks. He ran training at Starbucks for a decade prior to Menchie's, and he's got a team under him of six, and those guys work in a 4,000 square foot facility with a fully functional store, an auditorium, and a classroom. You'll come to us for 14 days, and we're going to give you all the education you need to be successful in this operation. And then when you open the store, we're going to send our team to you. We're going to work with your team at that point in your own store for at least four more days. We have operational support, so ongoing. We visit your store every 6 weeks for the life of the franchise. Okay? You're going to see us. We're going to work with you as a mentor, and we're going to assist you in making sure you're operating efficiently and effectively at the unit level. We have IT support, which we've already spoken about, and the marketing support is very robust. We provide to you the national level coverage that we spoke about a little bit. We can go through more detail on that. In terms of the local marketing, we will put together, you'll be working with a marketing coordinator who will help you with your marketing plans, looking at response rates, all that stuff we provide in terms of marketing services and support. Startup costs. Let's talk dollars and cents for a moment. Menchie's, I'm just going to boil it down high level, guys. We're about a $330,000 project cost. You can go into Menchie's with $100,000 in liquid assets. Okay? And what we would be doing is an SBA loan. So you can actually leverage the store and reduce the cash in. You would need a net worth of $450,000 to qualify for an SBA loan. But at that point, you're no longer investing $330,000. You'd be investing $100,000. And then you'd be taking a loan. The bank would then invest the 70% of the project, and it would reduce your cash infusion into the store. And that actually gives you a bit of a better return, which we can go through that under a financial modeling call that we would have as we're reviewing the FDD. The average Menchie, so if you look at the system performance, the average store within our brand is doing $111,000 EBITDA, meaning net operating income. The gross sales to achieve that is $452,000. That's how the top-line gross average, as stated in our franchise disclosure document, is $452,000. And then you see a flow-through or a net operating income of $111,000 on the average. Now, off a $330,000 investment, that would give you a return on investment a little better than 3 years. We already spoke about it, but the product margins are great. Cost of goods sold, as stated in our FDD, is averaging 27%. Which would give you a 73% gross margin. You hold only $4,000 worth of inventory. The investment to the return is very low. Strong ROI. The numbers work, guys. The economics holds, and we're an established system. I'm giving you franchisee numbers. These are not corporate numbers, guys, where I'm showing you corporate store volumes. These are how our average franchisee performs. So it's an apple-to-apple comparison. Also, a lot of candidates come to me and say, hey, I like return on investment, but I also want to understand return on equity. Am I going to have an equity position here? And the answer is absolutely. The brand is the brand itself has equity, and there's a very good return from that standpoint in terms of the return off the equity, the equity you would hold after getting the store operating. Cash on cash return strong. It's very scalable. It's scalable for two reasons. One, it's operationally simple, it's got very few moving parts, and there's a very effective systems that you can deploy to create the predictability. Second, it's got quick ramp-up periods, much faster ramp-up periods than you would see in a typical brick-and-mortar operation. So if you're going to leverage, let's say you're going to scale to three stores, you're not going to be able to invest in the second store with a bank loan anyway until the first store becomes profitable. So the faster you can get your ramp-up periods, the faster you can grow and to scale into additional stores with bank loans. So it's a very scalable model. If you're looking for growth, this is one that will definitely achieve that for you. You guys, there's so much to talk about, and I love this brand, but this is just a high-level overview. And I hope you guys enjoyed the presentation and you took some nuggets away, maybe on our brand, maybe on business, something that maybe triggered your thought in terms of marketing. But with that said, I think, Cindy, you wanted to open up for Q&A, and I definitely want to take questions and make sure I get some great answers out there for anyone who wishes to ask. Cindy, do you want to I'll turn it back over to you for the Q&A.
Great. Thank you, Michael. I'm going to go ahead and unmute the lines right now. And I'll go ahead and let Michael respond to your questions. Again, if you don't have a question, please be sure to mute your line so that others can hear the question. And you're also free to type your question in the chat box. So let me go ahead and unmute.
The conference has been muted.
Okay. Let's go ahead and see if we have any brave souls who will step up to the microphone and ask questions. Questions, go ahead.
The conference has been unmuted.
Perfect.
Sorry, let's try this again. Okay, questions. Who has a question?
This is Brad in New Jersey.
Go ahead, Brad.
The 100-something thousand, I guess in the earnings claim, does that include a manager or any debt service?
Great question, Brad. Thanks for kicking it off. The $111,000 net profit is how the average store is performing without debt service and without the manager. As
okay.
you integrate a manager into semi-absentee operations, labor increases a bit. It would increase or it would decrease your bottom line net profit to $82,000 net operating income on average as a manager-run operation.
Okay. Are there some stores that exceed that, or is it, you know, pretty much they're in line at that average?
Yeah, the good news, Brad, is we break down the sales by market, so every market would be broken out in the FDD for you so you can see how your market performs. But
right.
in reality, the stores are actually increasing in sales now. So 452 is how the system performs right now, all in with stores even in older phases of development. In 2012, Menchie's did something really interesting. We integrated a new real estate platform. And we used to outsource our real estate. We brought everything in-house, and we actually built a real estate department. Since
what?
Then, we've opened 63 new locations. And on average, now the brand is performing at $505,000. So we've increased our top-line gross sales by a little over $50,000 by new real estate, more effective systems, if you will. So what I'm telling you is based off of the entire system at 452, but how the brand is actually performing with the new systems is at 505. So I'm being very conservative in the numbers, especially as it relates to financials, but we're actually increasing in sales. And there is a somewhat of a very predictable bell curve. It's you're going to see a little bit of a deviation off that number, but bear in mind, 452 is a conservative number.
Thank you.
No problem.
Hey, Michael, this is Ken in Columbus.
Hi, Ken.
Hi. Quick question. How do you find the stores do in the cold weather months in areas that, you know, don't benefit from it being warm all year?
Great question, Ken. So the Menchie's does have some seasonality, and you have to account for it. Okay? It's obviously we're a cold brand or we're a cold treat. Now, it's interesting, though. So you're going to see about a 40% swing in sales between the top-performing month, which is July, and the bottom performing month, which is right in, like in November and December are our bottom, are the slowest months of the year. But data, though, is counterintuitive. So if you look at our sales, and we break them out in the FDD, guys, the top four performing markets, three of them are cold. Top performing market in the United States is Michigan. Second highest performing market in the United States is Alaska. Third top performing market in the United States is Hawaii, so it's warm. Fourth top-performing market in the nation is the state of Washington. Now, it's interesting because Washington only gets 30 days of sunshine. So in its own regard, that's a cold, dismal. It's not. I shouldn't say dismal. No offense to anyone in Washington, but it's they get about 30 days of sunshine there, so it rains a lot. Now, if you look at the data in frozen dessert consumption, right, the ice cream data mirrors that. The highest consuming market, so the consumption rates are the highest per capita, in the United States and Alaska. Consumption rates are the highest per capita in the world in Scandinavia. Now, if you look at ice cream brands, where did they all start? Dairy Queen started in Wisconsin. What about Ben & Jerry's? Vermont. What about Dyer's? New York. All these brands started in cold markets. You're going to see seasonality on both ends of the spectrum. So one thing to take into consideration, Ken, is you're going to see inverse seasonality on the warm side of the market. So you get hyper-frequency pattern in the summer for a colder market. Does that answer the question?
It sure does. Thank you.
No problem. Thanks, Ken.
What other questions do we have out there?
Michael, this is Dennis from Michigan.
Hi, Dennis.
Hi, quick question on does Menchie's think that this is a healthy food? Does it position itself as a healthy food or not?
All right, so the way we're positioning it is it's a healthier offering, and it is healthier. So when you do a side-by-side comparison with frozen yogurt that we're creating and compare it to Baskin-Robbins, for example, we have 60% fewer calories when you compare our chocolate to their chocolate. We're made with skim milk, so it's 0% milk fat. They provide about 16% dairy fat in their product. And we also have probiotics, and there's live and active dairy cultures, millions of bacteria in every ounce of the yogurt. And it's actually promoting healthy digestion. It's fighting some infections in the body. Now, our brand is moving in a way like Chipotle, so we're going towards a healthier product offering. Next year, we're already launching some initiatives that are going to be nutrient-rich infused products. So, for example, we're going to create a line. Your cheesecake's still going to be found, so we're not taking that away from you guys, but we are creating a line where we'll have like a carrot orange. We'll have like spinach-infused products, kind of like the V8 model, where they take nutrient-rich vegetables and infuse it with fruit juices to mask the vegetable. So we're going to do that and create a line of a lot of different product offerings so health-conscious families can get offerings like that in our store. We also are moving away from GMO, so we will be fully GMO in the next couple of years where we have no genetically modified ingredients whatsoever in our brand. We already have in our cow, so Scott Brothers gives us an advantage because they are actually farming the milk. And the cows are not used with any growth hormones, so it's an RBST-free product. When we create products, we're using the product that we're formulating. So like a Girl Scout cookie is not a flavoring. It's a Girl Scout cookie. We mill it to a powder and infuse it into our bases. So it's a healthier alternative. It's a premium product as well. So when you look at like the bases are really rich. It's kind of like a thick and creamy consistency. No grit. Like, you're not going to have a gritty texture. It's not going to be watery nor icy. It's a really good base product. And then we use a natural – when I say natural, we use the product that we're formulating. We have over 100 different product offerings at Menchie's. So we even have something like a Cherry Jolly Rancher tart. But Cherry Jolly Rancher isn't natural, but we use the ingredients in Cherry Jolly Rancher to formulate that. Does that answer the question, Dennis?
Yes, it does. Thanks, Michael.
No problem. Thank you.
Okay, Michael, we have a question that came through the chat line here just a moment ago. The question from Dane, what differentiates Menchie's from TCBY?
All right, Dane, good question. So if you look at TCBY's positioning, it's very much like I spoke about in the branding segment. So they're doing exactly what everybody else in the space is doing with the exception of Menchie's. So if you think about their branding, TCBY stands for This Country's Best Yogurt. So This Country's Best Yogurt sounds very similar to Yogurtland, Yogurtini, Yogurtology, Yogurt Mountain, Yogalicious, Yogurt Fruits, Yogurt Berry. All these brands are doing the same thing. So when you go into a TCBY, you're not going to see anything that their positioning is different. So their positioning around the product life cycle, there's no tangibility in the brand. TCBY is very much, it's more trendy. It's kind of like the Vegas kind of hippish type of an environment. It doesn't have the same market appeal as you're going to get with Menchie's. Menchie's is a family brand that appeals to about 80% of the market. TCBY is trying to approach a niche play in the market. TCBY is positioned around their core product offering, and there's nothing that's experiential in the store. So again, it's positioned. Let me give you an example because you probably know this. So Burger King is to TCBY as Menchie's is to McDonald's. Okay, McDonald's doesn't sell McDonald's, but Burger King sells burgers. Now, McDonald's does on average $2.6 million in AUV, guys, while Burger King does 1.2 to 1.4. Why? Don't they both sell the same product? But the engagement level to McDonald's is much different than you're going to get with the engagement level to Burger King. Because, again, Burger King rides a product life cycle. They're positioning the brand, communicating to their market, and experiences around their core product, nothing else. There's nothing tangible, nothing experiential to their brand. That would be the biggest differentiator you're going to find with Menchie's. Secondarily, our product. We're launching all of those product initiatives, the partnership agreements, all exclusive to our brand. Those are things that are not getting picked up anywhere else. Nobody's doing that in any of the other brands. We're the only one doing those kind of partnerships. Dan, I know you texted that or you chatted that one in. I hope that answered the question for you.
Great, thank you. I do have another question that came through the chat line here, Michael. How many stores have closed recently and why?
Okay, great question. So if you look in our FDD, we disclose through the history of this brand. So you can look at every single store that's closed. We sit right now at about a 4% failure rate, and that's historically through our brand. And we're really proud of that number, guys. If you look at the IFA, and they publish statistics about failure rates in franchising, the average franchise brand will fail at 7%. So we're much lower than the average in franchising, again, because of the systems. Now, secondarily, if you look at independent operations and failure, 9 out of 10 independent operations will fail. So the reason you want to look at franchising is for the partnership, to have somebody that's going to be looking at all the other variables that we provide, and the systems to mitigate your risk, right? You're aligning with a proven operating system. That's what Menchie's provides. And in franchising, we have even a lower failure rate than we're seeing across the average. So we're proud of that. Does that answer the question?
I would say that's a good answer.
You know what, Cindy, I'm sorry. I forgot there was a second part to that. The question was why.
Why?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This is why, guys. So it chunks down. If you look at the operational success with Menchie's, it boils down to three things. You have location, you have operations, and you have marketing. Those three legs to the stool is what hold the stool up. Now, if you look at it, the reason it usually stems from location, and almost always it was a result of our old real estate process. So, guys, we identified the pressure point and we fixed it. That's the reason our sales have increased, is by strengthening that muscle. But in some of the older stores, we weren't visiting the location. So we were getting site packages that were being compiled by the franchisee and the local real estate broker. Now, franchisees oftentimes fall in love with sites, and they miss the details. Love is blind, they say, right? And the broker is putting together information because they want to get the agreement, the lease agreement signed, because they're paid off a commission. At the time, prior to 2012, we were not going physically to the sites to mitigate the risk. We do now. So what was happening is stores would open. The franchisee was not making their projections, and they would start to panic. So then they would reduce their staff. The store would start not to be friendly. It wouldn't be clean. They wouldn't do any marketing because they were restricting as opposed to marketing themselves out of a bad location. And then things spiraled out of control. Now, we're lucky as a brand to have very little experience in that, but we're also lucky as a brand to have those experiences, because those experiences is what required us to modify our system, strengthen that muscle, and create a better platform for franchisees now coming on board. Again, the system has been improved dramatically in real estate. The muscle is now extremely strong, and the risk will be mitigated in real estate by us visiting the location, which is currently what we do today.
Great. Thank you so much, Michael. We have a couple of questions here from Rick. Rick's first question, I can actually answer this one. How do I get a copy of the FDD? Rick, I'm going to touch on that at the very end here. You are in Louisville, Kentucky. I know how to say that because that is where Friend Net's headquarters is. And you're lucky enough to work, being in Louisville, having some really great resources there. But you'll be able to work with the Friend representative for the Louisville, Kentucky market, and they'll be able to create that introduction to Michael or other people in Menchie's who will be able to help you get a copy of the FDD and walk you through it. So that's the answer to that question. His other question, Michael, is, I am interested in multiple stores. Do you offer any franchise protection?
We do. So we have package options for those that wish to scale their business. We have a 3-store package and a 5-store package. And we have anything bigger than that, too. We can do a customized option with a very large protected territory agreement. But anyone coming on board with our family gets territorial protection. We protect what they call as a trade area, during the real estate process. And a trade area is very large. It allows you to look at multiple real estate options, make some comparisons. We can do a really good amount of analysis in a very large trade area. The trade area system is designed to allow you to change. It doesn't restrict you. The trade area only protects you. So you can move from one trade area to another over time as you're looking and evaluating different real estate alternatives. Now, if you sign 3 agreements with us or even 5 store agreements with us, we'll secure the number of trade areas to which you're committing to open stores. So if you're securing 3, if you're going to sign 3 agreements, we'll secure 3 trade areas. Now, our trade areas are really big, guys, so they oftentimes will even contain more than one store. The trade area, again, is for the real estate process. As soon as you have a location, we have a physical address, we then are going to define a contractually protected territory. And we also have a territory that would prevent any store from operating within 2 miles of another store. Just because we can doesn't mean we do. All right, so that's a unilateral protection. It would be in any market, 2 mile restricted territory. We'd also do an impact study and make sure that we're not going to adversely impact a new store by opening, or adversely impact an existing store by opening a new store. But that's the territory contractual, and that's also the trade area and how we protect the stores for a development schedule if you want to do a multi-unit plan with us. But you get protections all the way around.
Great. Good answer. I appreciate that, Michael. Do we have any other questions? We're coming close to the end of our time here. And so if there are any other questions, now would be the time to bring that up. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. Brad, New Jersey again. As far as somebody's talking about competition, is there any competition that hurts? I mean, there's all kinds of names out there. I forget what they're called. But is there anybody you don't want to be next to?
We actually want to be cognizant of it, Brad, because we want to understand everybody in your market who's serving a frozen dessert. Okay, now, at the end of the day, even our corporate unit, which we have operating in Encino, operates directly across the street from a competitor. Okay, we have no problems in that, but we want to make sure that we're not getting out-positioned in our real estate. We don't want to be at a real estate disadvantage. Now, let's say your competitor is operating catty corner from our store, and our store is in a very vibrant, high-traffic shopping center, and theirs is in a little strip mall. At that point, we have no problems in operating there because we're in a dominant, we've out-positioned them. And we're going to take advantage of all the impulse traffic behavior that's in the shopping center. The brand itself is just an opinion statement, guys, but you can do your own due diligence and you'll conclude this. The brand is super engaging. We've got a really good retention strategy behind it. We also are encouraging frequency pattern through all of the interact with the loyalty cards and the little touch points of the different systems in place. So the competition we don't fear competition, but we also want to make sure that we are in as good or a better real estate position than they are.
I got you. Thank you.
No problem.
Great. Great. Very good questions tonight. And with that, since we're at the end of our time here, Michael, I want to thank you. I mean, I think you did an excellent presentation, and I do have to say that in Denver, my family does go to Menchie's. It very much is an experience. The one that we frequent, actually, there's a lot of interaction with kids. They do a lot of community engagement, and I love that about the brand, and it's just darn good. So thank you so much. Menchie's is a very good partner for FriendNet. We do quite well with the Menchie's brand, and I think that just goes to show that there's a definite following there. Now, I do want to mention to all of you that if you are not already engaged with a FriendNet consultant in your local market, what you can do is go to our website at friendnet.com and fill out the little form on the website, and then somebody from your local market will be in touch with you. And at that point, they can send you a recording of this webinar. If you know who your local FriendNet consultant is, just reach out to them, and they will be happy to send this to you via email so that you can listen to it again. We'll have it ready to go by tomorrow morning. But thank you all for participating this evening. And, Michael, thank you so much for for such a great presentation today. I think it was very, very good and very helpful for those who are interested.
Yeah, thank you, Cindy. And I appreciate the opportunity to present today, and thank you for the local support in Denver. We appreciate that.
Absolutely. All right, well, thank you all very much, and we'll go ahead and end it here, and have a wonderful evening.
All right, bye-bye, guys.
Bye.